You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Woo, doggy.
Carr stole that from you.
Did he steal that from me?
He does it all the time, dude.
That was a high school
thing. That.
Well, I stole from the crew kids in high school. That was their battle cry. Woo, doggy.
That sounds like a lacrosse guy thing.
No, it was a crew guy thing at our school.
I used to play lacrosse in high school. I grew up in Oneida County, which is one of the Iroquois tribes. And we would play those guys. It was intense, man.
Yeah, my brother had a guard too, the Thompson brothers in college.
Okay, yeah.
They played Albany every year. He shut them down. I'm going to pump my brother up. He used to, for anybody who doesn't know, Lyle Miles Thompson, two Native American lacrosse players who are the best ever, played for Albany University. My brother was a defender who would take the best attackman on the team. And while he was at Bryant, they were at Albany, and they were the two best attackmen on the team.
They're incredible on offense. Like they must start with it in the crib.
They know. In their practice, they get like a little piece of wood in the backyard. It's like this big, and that's how they get good at stick skills. They like hit that little circle. They're gonna go back and forth, back and forth.
That's my dad's favorite story. Is in eighth grade, I took I played defense against one of those guys, and he was tearing us up. He scored like 3 goals in like 5 minutes, and then I just kept whacking him, and he left the game. So
he left the game. Yeah. The Thompson brothers had a incredibly high pain tolerance.
Yeah. I can imagine. Yeah. They're a lot more elite. Probably.
Yeah. The, lacrosse, it's lax season. It's peak lax season. Basketball's over. College basketball is, you get quality lacrosse games on ESPN. No, time of year.
You going to go back to calling games?
Probably not. Probably not. My live game calling days are probably behind me. It's a skill.
Yeah.
Trying to call. You have to remember
how long
names.
Did you do it for? Like 2 years?
For like broadcasting.
Yeah.
I did it for like 2 games.
Oh, wow. Okay.
For Anderson High School here in Austin. I'm much better suited as a coach. I may get back to coaching at some point, but I have been away from the game for a while. There's definitely some advancements that have been made.
Is Texas catching up? Because I remember it was all East Coast. It's like Philly, Long Island, Syracuse.
Yeah, I think Texas is catching up. UT has I think they have the best club team in the country now. In the MCLA. I think there's rumors that they want to go D1. That would be cool. Have a D1 lax team here in Austin.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah. The high school scene up in Dallas, I think, is stronger than it is here in Austin. Yeah, lax is growing, fastest growing sport in the world.
Is it? That's awesome.
Fastest sport in 2 feet. Fastest ground sport. Get on the lax train before it's too late. Lacrosse is like Bitcoin in 2011 right now. That's probably like 2017, actually. Oh, pumped to have you here.
Yeah.
Let's dive into your background first. You were saying that we were talking physics. You listened to the Matthew Pines episode.
Yeah.
What do you think? Can we manifest?
I don't know. I think it's possible, man. I think there's some connection between consciousness and matter. I don't know. Yeah. But it's hubristic to think that we have it all figured out.
I agree. I left side of the bell curve. So I'm just like, I think there's plenty of anecdotal evidence throughout history, people who talk about either having premonitions or telepathic experience. In the Matthew episode, I certainly had one with my brother where I woke up. I was like, there's something wrong with that motherfucker. And got a call from my mom 10 minutes later. He's in the hospital.
Well, it seems like everybody has deja vu. What the hell is that?
Right? Is that a glitch in the matrix?
Yeah.
Are we accelerating a reality in which the matrix is real with this AI?
Maybe.
Well, you're the one working on it or leveraging it. At least the Cascader.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's really two possibilities. We either have like a monolithic, quasi-monopolistic AI paradigm. So you have the Apples, Amazons, Googles, OpenAIs controlling everything and calling the shots, or you have an open system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm a long time listener, first time caller here. And, you know, so I've been keeping track of this. You know, it's kind of surreal to be on the show because I remember running wind sprints over in Lewis, Delaware, listening to the Laser Hoddle episode. And
Laser, you need to come back on.
Yeah. Laser, where we got to put the laser bat signal out. But yeah, I just remember listening to that. It's like, yeah, AI does help the state scale. Like, yeah. What was it? Peter Thiel at the Nixon seminar sitting next to Pompeo talking about how on one end of the spectrum, you have AI, which can be kind of an authoritarian technology. And then you have Bitcoin, which can be kind of a libertarian technology. So all of those, you know, consuming that content got me thinking of, you know, what do we do in this AI future? Cause I don't think it's going anywhere. And it's a lot like gunpowder in a way. Like, either you use it and apply it, or you get subjugated by someone that does.
Yeah, no, I went to a couple of the Thiel lectures that they had at UATX a couple of weeks ago. That was one of the students asking the question, like, if AI is going to become this all-encompassing digital panopticon surveillance tech, like, should we try to nip it in the bud right now? He's like, no, it doesn't have to become that. It certainly can, and it may certainly be trending in that direction, but when these things manifest and materialize, you have to lean into it and try to affect it in a way that produces an outcome that is beneficial or that you would like to see, which is not living in that digital surveillance panopticon.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the people that are liberty minded and open source minded that are in on this wave are kind of like the space force for liberty. Like, they have to be in this new frontier. You want them in on everything, like Lawrence Taylor. You don't want to just let the open AIs kind of call the shots.
Mm-hmm. And so how would you describe the landscape as it exists now? Juxtaposing open source to monolithic big tech run AI.
I think it's pretty balanced right now. I think that open source is punching way above its weight when you compare the amount of funds they spend versus the results they get. And a huge white pill was DeepSeek. Now everyone's going to say, well, they're Chinese. They shifted a certain way. They cheated. They distilled. You can see that in certain contexts, it'll think that it's open AI. That's probably all true. But at the same time, it's open source. I'm running it in my own cloud server right now. And it's the token cost is so damn cheap. So it kind of collapses this kind of over leveraging effect and centralizing effects these monoliths have by getting cheap capital.
Listen, freaks, I know you're tired of me talking about Fold, but I'm going to beat the drum. I'm going to beat the dead horse. If you're a Bitcoiner living in the United States and you're not using Fold, I'm just going to ask one question. What are you doing? You're leaving sats on the table. They've got gift cards. They've got their debit card. You can use your credit card. Just connect your credit card to the Fold app. Use the Fold app to pay off your credit card. And you're going to stack your credit card points and Bitcoin as well. They even teamed up with CrowdHealth to give their members Fold Plus membership at no cost. Don't leave sats on the table. Go sign up for Fold today. Go to tftc.io/fold. There's nothing to lose except sats that you could have stacked. Sup, freaks. This rip of TFTC was brought to you by our good friends at CoinKite. They make the Cold Card Q, my favorite hardware wallet, the most secure hardware wallet on the market. As you can see, it's got the BlackBerry form factor, full keyboard. It's got two secure enclaves. You create your private public keys offline. The device never has to go online, never does go online. So you keep your Bitcoin secure. If you have your Bitcoin on exchanges and you're looking to get it off, secure it in the best way possible. Pick up a Cold Card Q. Go to CoinKite.com, find the Cold Card Q, use the code TFTC for 5% off. If you're a power user of Bitcoin, like I am, if you're running a business on a Bitcoin standard, if you're just a Bitcoiner who wants to secure your Bitcoin, get the most secure hardware wallet on the market, go get the Cold Card Q. It's a beautiful thing. Yeah. And so for the layman listener out there who may not understand the minute differences between monolithic AI and open source AI, like DeepSeek or Llama to a certain extent, how would you describe the differences and how they've been implemented so far?
Yes. And when we talk about AI, typically we're talking about large language models. And this is this revolution in the ability to understand language adequately, and images as well. Those are two things we take for granted as humans because we've evolved to see faces, recognize predators, speak to each other, communicate to each other, but it's actually a very complex process. And so going back to the 70s, this was a massive problem that people had difficulty solving. And they tried to solve it with sort of top-down rules and realized they couldn't really do it. So they applied bottom-up rules using neural nets, convolutional neural networks, and other techniques such as those. And what we're seeing is the culmination of decades of research and application. And to go back to your question, you know, the difference between monolith and non-monolithic, what the large language model really is a system of equations. It's literally a matrix. It's called a matrix. And so it's math, right? It's math, but the monolithic systems are holding that behind an API where they don't let you download the weights. They don't let you run it in your own hardware. You have to run it on their hardware. And so that gives them an asymmetric advantage because now you're dependent on them to give you the information, to not censor the information, and to pay them always.
Yeah. And you don't know, since you don't know the weights, you don't know how the models and the matrices act exactly. Like, you don't know the biased context that could be injected into that type of system. So when you think of the specter of an all-encompassing digital panopticon run by AI, like, the bias of that panopticon will be decided by the rulers of that model and the weights in that model and the context that's fed to that model. Now, it is insane that we're sort of speed running into the, like, whether we like it or not, it's happening. It's obvious. Like, AI has become more of a part of my life. I use it every day now. And it certainly is useful. And I do use a combination of open source models like Llama and monolithic models like Grok and ChatGPT, but I do think it's important for everybody to realize that there are two directions that we can go in, which is one where the context and the bias is tightly controlled by a group of people who may be benevolent, maybe malicious, but regardless of whether they're benevolent or malicious, it's still not ideal to have similar like Bitcoin or Bitcoin because you don't like central authorities controlling the monetary system, like apply that context to AI. And I think it still rings true. You don't want centralized actors controlling arguably one of the most important technologies that will begin to integrate into our lives over the next decade or two.
Yeah. It's kind of like you don't want with Bitcoin, you don't want anyone to control the stock or the storage of wealth. And then on the flip side, like if AI is centric to the economy in the future, which I think it is, then that's controlling kind of the flow of wealth, right? So I think that's essential as well. And yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about Cascader. Like, why did you decide to build Cascader? How are you building it? And let's talk about all the different sort of tentacles that are emanating from.
Yeah. Yeah. So Cascader, just the, like a two-sentence summary, and we can get into an example, is Cascader creates AI-powered building blocks that allow businesses to achieve greater productivity and lower cost. And we monetize those externally. Additionally, we use them internally to build niche applications in lucrative markets. And so an example of this would be, we have a time-stamped transcript API. And so three examples of us using it. Example number one is just a podcaster like you goes to our website, downloads, you know, the transcript and maybe even like creates content based on that all in one shot. So that's one example. A second example would be pull that up jamie.ai. So that's our service that not only gets the transcript, not only indexes it so it's searchable, but it allows you to pull them up in real time. It allows you to play back the clip of exactly what you're looking for in a, you know, long, even 3-hour podcast, and then also clip it and share it easily, like with the deep link. So that would be a second example. And then the third example of a timestamp transcript is our product, Clara AI, which helps attorneys process multilingual video and audio data securely and pull them up even in, you know, high pressure situations like a cross examination where they need to present the evidence in a, you know, in a time constrained, high pressure situation. So those are three applications that are pretty disparate, but you can see how they all stack on the same building block that gets reused efficiently.
And are they all running off the same model or?
Yes.
Yeah. DeepSeek.
I don't use DeepSeek. I use something else.
Okay.
I use something else.
You don't want to say?
I guess I can say it's just I use DeepGram because I find them to be higher accuracy overall. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to see some of like their newer models. But I think over time that's starting to get commoditized for obvious reasons. So that's kind of why I think about, okay, that's the building block. And then it's like, okay, can we, I think like an electrical engineer, cascade comes from a circuits term where you cascade systems together, you put them together. So I think about, okay, I have this building block and maybe I typically package it with circuit A, B, C, or API A, B, and C. And now this is a monolith. Right. And maybe it's an agent. Maybe it's a whole agent. Maybe it's a subsystem to an agent. Right. But it's all modular. And that's been our focus at Cascader. And the reason we went this direction is because we wanted to build toward this machine payable web. We wanted to build towards this future where you have autonomous agents negotiate with each other, specialize in different areas and, you know, effectively hire and subcontract each other in real time in order to accomplish, you know, more complex tasks on behalf of a user like you or me.
Yeah. No, because agentic AI is so hot right now. I think that's, if you could squint and look at it, like the agents aren't perfect yet, but they're getting better at a rapid pace. And I think that's like the next big breakthrough. Obviously what you're working on is like this modular sort of build out. And I think that, I forget the exact term, but it's like the, another way to frame monolith versus like open source is like, monolith is like one all-encompassing model, or you have the world of a thousand minds where you have very specific models for specific tasks that ultimately become agents that interact with each other.
Yeah. And so we talked about kind of the ethical side of monolith versus non-monolithic, but it's economically probably more efficient to have a bunch of third-party teams running their own thing. And then what's the glue that holds it together? I think Bitcoin makes the most sense because now you can delegate a Bitcoin budget to, you know, to an agent and have it run in real time.
Our good friends, Parker Lewis and Dhruv Bansal, are two of the deepest thinkers in Bitcoin. While they come from very different backgrounds, they've landed on the exact same conclusion. It's Bitcoin that matters, not crypto. This masterclass lays out why 21 million is the key breakthrough, how Bitcoin, not blockchain, creates decentralization, and why everything else will be built on Bitcoin. Understand why Bitcoin works and why nothing else does. Watch the premiere at unchained.com/TFTC. That's unchained.com/TFTC. Why Bitcoin, not stablecoins or Stripe?
Well, I mean, first off, they're not censorship resistant, right? So like right off the bat, you have that issue at hand. We have a bifurcating world, you know, we have the breakdown of SWIFT and all that. So there's that component. And then, the other part is, I guess, how do you know they're not a credit risk? Like, I'd rather just have the bearer asset. You know, maybe it's premature because there's some volatility in Bitcoin and maybe that people have liabilities in fiat, but I'd rather know that you actually sent me the money than take it on faith.
And are there technical superiorities to using Bitcoin over something like stablecoins or Stripe? Like, is L4 a 2 like much easier to integrate?
Personally, and I don't want to ruffle any feathers here, but I just kind of made a very simplified version of L402 that just uses the pre-image and payment hash and public key to verify payments. I think L402 is great in a lot of contexts where you need more sophistication. For me personally, I just kind of rolled my own and called it a day. But as you point out, the additional, you know, it's censorship resistant, it's global, so it's inclusive of people that can't necessarily get access to financial services, and then it's private too. The fact that it's onion routed, I can leverage that to remain private while running all these sessions, and I don't really know if there's another way to go about that.
Yeah. So we're deep in the weeds right now, but let's like zoom out, like paint the picture for like a user experience flow of completing a task and how the agents would use Bitcoin to interact with each other.
Yeah. So the really simple example I go to is, you know, imagine that you have a personal assistant AI agent that is aware of your schedule. Maybe it takes calls for you, it books things for you. And then it happens to need, or it notices that you want to go to Bitcoin Vegas. Then it would, that's not kind of its wheelhouse. So maybe it'll go to another agent that specializes in travel booking. It'll get you the full stack of hotel, transportation to and from the airport, best, you know, best flight, best pricing, et cetera, to get that accomplished. And so it kind of subcontracts, you give it a Bitcoin budget, it subcontracts that to a higher performance agent for that particular task. Now you could extend that out to a whole bunch of things and a bunch of maybe even smaller niches, even smaller than travel agents. Perhaps that travel agent has sub agents that are good at hotels, airlines, et cetera. And you expand this out to the whole economy, you start to realize it starts to resemble a real economy. So do you want central planning? Right? Do you want to go to the Politburo to book go about your daily life? Or do you want to just have an open internet?
Yeah. No, I think that's a question that I've been bouncing around in my head for many months now when it comes to this convergence of Bitcoin and AI. Like, one thing I'm highly focused on in terms of really leaning into something, whether we're implementing it here at TFTC or investing at 1030, was like the order of operations of the success. And that use case you just explained, like, it makes a lot of sense. But like, there you have the two-sided market problem where, as much as I'd like to give this agent a Bitcoin budget and go book a flight for me, like the airlines and travel agencies aren't accepting Bitcoin over the Lightning Network yet. And so like, that infrastructure needs to be built out. Correct me if I'm wrong, but do you think just like agent to agent sort of commerce is going to find product market fit first, where maybe it's not necessarily I need you to go book me a ticket, but hey, I'm doing deep research on the specific area of finance. I need you to go partner with a model that specializes in weather data, because that weather data really affects the outcome of the investment I want to make. And so like in this example, it's like an agent going to the weather data agent, be like, here, run this compute for me. Here's some Bitcoin to go do that. Return me the answer.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I think the answer is yes. Agent to agent will find product market fit. Now, at startup day, I covered kind of the three barriers that I see in my eyes to getting to this kind of sci-fi future. And the first is just agent reliability. So the agent itself has to have high levels of reliability. And if you think about it, it's sort of like a manufacturing process, because it's an LLM running many loops to attempt to accomplish a goal. So the chain of thought stuff is great. Like, that stuff is, I think, improving and kind of letting us peel back the hood in order to identify and improve the quality over time of these models. But the truth is, if you're 99.99% accurate, but it takes 1,000 steps to accomplish your travel booking, then that means you're going to be off, like, what is that, 10% of the time? Are you willing to take that risk with your precious Bitcoin? You know, a lot of people probably aren't. So I think that's why I kind of drew it as a pyramid. It's like, that's the bottom of the pyramid is agent reliability. So that's a technical challenge. And then, as you point out, there's market challenges, which is agents have to proliferate. Not only do they have to be reliable, but now you have to have enough teams using them in different marketplaces, effectively building the digital workforce so that they can interoperate in this new economy. And then lastly, you have to have incentives to be open and accept these things. So suppose Apple and Amazon decide that they're just going to collude and leave everyone out, but their AIs will collaborate. You know, that's not what we want. We want open systems. I'm encouraged to see things like MCP coming out there, things like Nostr out there, and then Bitcoin, you know, Bitcoin incentives to be the glue that holds this huge mosaic of the Bitcoin agent economy together.
Yeah. And that's the, That's a fascinating thing too, is I think humans are injecting a lot of preconceived notions about the optimal monetary system that'll be leveraged by artificial intelligence. But I think it will be really funny if and when we do find out that the AI sort of coalesces around a money it prefers independently without us injecting our bias. And Logan, in post, mark down the timestamp. I want you to pull up the, I'll share a link with it, but the, I'm sure you saw the video, of the Minecraft AI agents. Did you see
those? I didn't see those.
Oh, so Logan, play the clip and I'll explain it. Play it after I explain it to Jim. But the, there was an AI lab that wanted to test out agents. And so it created its own Minecraft server and unleashed 1,000 autonomous AI agents into the server and just let them run free to see if they could actually develop a mature sort of ecosystem within this Minecraft server. And they found over all the iterations they ran, like in 95%+ of them, the agents coalesced around Minecraft gems as their monetary system because they were relatively scarce, divisible, portable, somewhat hard to find, and didn't really have other use cases. And so, like, in this Minecraft,
they were added into the game as money, like a feature of.
They were?
Well, like,
Logan's trying to correct me here.
I'm just saying, like it makes sense that the AI chose the money thing as money. The reason for emeralds to be in the game is to be used as money.
Okay, so.
Well, did they subjugate?
But they didn't. They weren't told it was money, right?
Probably not.
Yeah, they weren't. All right, Logan. Thanks for interjecting. No, but holding a strip. But still, they weren't told it was money. And they
so you said 95% of them.
I think
that's
a high percentage, maybe even higher than that.
I'm wondering if they wound up eventually subjugating the 5% that didn't, because isn't that what happened with the gold versus the silver standard?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. If so, no, they were very altruistic. Play the video.
This is a Minecraft server, but every player here is actually an autonomous AI agent. And they're completely Minecraft agnostic, capable of using other apps and games. Our agents started with nothing and then worked together to collect over 300 items in Minecraft. They set up a market where agents agreed to use gems as a common currency for trading supplies, building an economy. In this case, you might think the merchants would trade the most, but it was actually the priest. Why? He was bribing townsfolk to convert.
Yeah, I got freaked out when I was a kid. I saw, like, it was like a Capture the Bacon type game between, like, AI avatars. And it was, like, very primitive because this was 10 years ago. But they started figuring out that they can, like, attack each other to get them to stop going after the bacon.
So, I started killing each other?
Yeah.
Lovely. Lovely.
I think the safeguards are probably a good thing, as much as I don't like censorship.
No, they're important.
Yeah.
But I think creating proper incentives to act in a cooperative fashion makes sense. I think money is strong incentive. So, like, back to my point, which is, like, I wouldn't be surprised if, I mean, we're seeing it in crypto. We're like, AI crypto tokens. So we're going to create, like, a token for each model. Barry Silbert was out there talking about his shitcoin project where you're incentivizing the build out of models and all this with the shitcoin. But it's like,
it's going back to barter.
Yeah.
But, and, like, you're just taking on counterparty risk of the issuer not rugging you.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but it's like, I think it would be hilarious. Maybe that's how we actually realize if we have AGI or not, is if, like, the models, the agents are like, no, like, I'm not using the stable coin. I'm not using the shit coin. I'm not using your Stripe account. Like, give me a Bitcoin wallet. I want to use that to spend. It's much more efficient for me.
Yeah. And it makes you wonder if maybe that's the leash on AI, since we can tether them to the real world through energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And private keys, I guess, too.
Yeah. But, I mean, this is one of Drew's theories, is that, like, AI, like, Bitcoin is the money for AI because it just makes sense. And if you're thinking about how to restrain AI from just, like, doing this unbounded sort of resource extraction, it probably makes sense to introduce this hard money that humans have coalesced around as well, so they can't print more to go do resource extraction that's not, again, in a sort of cooperative incentive structure, which Bitcoin creates.
Yeah, and probably for the foreseeable future, they'll at least be dependent on us for energy to power right? It's a power, all that stuff. So, yeah. I mean, I don't want to go Matrix mode, but
yeah, we're going to have to blot out the sun. And then am I going to wake up in a tube of a vat of liquid goo at some point before the end of my life? Hopefully not.
Plug me back in. I'm a micro influencer.
I know the steak is fake, but it tastes so good. Just plug me back in. Plug me back in.
Is that what the ETH guys are doing?
Probably.
They're eating like tofu steak.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably getting anemic.
They're tofu steak or Soylent. The, but where would you say like we are now in terms of like the maturation? Because like the agentic framework, like once it pops off, like I've been playing with Manus. I'm not sure if you've seen that model that was that product that was launched. I'm not sure if it's a model, but it has this sort of agentic framework where you give it a task and it.
Yeah, like I actually didn't play with it yet, but I did see like some demos. Yeah. And that's interesting. I mean, I think certainly getting much stronger. I'm kind of caught, kind of ambivalent about which direction it'll go. I think, look, 5 years down the road, like I'm bullish, but I do wonder if there's weird incentives with inference just because of all the VC subsidies, like what's going on there. DeepSeek is like a counterpoint on that. They made it much cheaper. So it's, I'm a little surprised that I haven't seen, I just did research and maybe I missed a model, but I'm looking for, you know, what are the lowest costs for inference? Cause the variable cost is the compute gem, right? I don't care how much DeepSeek spent. You know, they made a bunch of probably false claims about how little they spent, but that regardless of that, they did some very clever techniques if you study the way they trained DeepSeek, but also just the fact that it's so cheap. The variable cost is so low. It's like, I kind of don't care how much they spent.
Well, what are the clever things they did in training and why is it so cheap?
I'm a little rusty cause I looked at it like right when it came out. I'm not entirely sure how it got so cheap. I'd have to study that more. But I do know that they used a reasoning model, which was less adept at language, but was good at, I think it was called like DeepSeek V0 or zero, something like that. And they put that in a pipeline and they created a bunch of what's called synthetic data. So it was data that isn't real, but it was actually high quality, which would have taken a long time. You know, even if you got tons of Chinese people making content, you wouldn't be able to keep up. So the fact that it was able to create this high quality synthetic data that accelerated their development and I think lowered their cost significantly. There's some questions they probably distilled from OpenAI as well. I'm not fully clear on exactly how that went, but point is that they got the token cost way down and you can run it in your own cluster in AWS or Azure. So,
and so you can verify like that is verifiable that low token cost is not being subsidized by some money backing DeepSeek. Like you run it in a cloud instance and you like,
that's my understanding. I still haven't gotten my first bill for it. So I got to triple check that, but it looks like it's pretty cheap even in AWS, even with the overhead of setting up and paying them their VIG and everything, it seems that it is cheaper. And so that's kind of a counterpoint on, you know, is this leverage effectively, is this leverage, is this pulling of value from the future forward to build AI? Is it paying off? Maybe it looks like it kind of is. So if you asked me 4 months ago, I would have said probably not. There might be a correction where, you know, you're not going to use ChatGPT to ask where you should, you know, what you should have for dinner. You're going to use it to like get your job done faster 3 times a day instead of 100 times a day. That's conceivable, I think, but I don't, I mean, with DeepSeek, it's pretty good. And I think there's levels to this and it depends on the task, but it's interesting. Guy Swan points out, it's kind of like graphics after a certain point, like I'm getting the automation.
The marginal return is that.
Yeah. And so there's certainly value in pushing the envelope, just like there is with, it's a lot like semiconductors in my eyes, the way they push the envelope, but it's good enough to get a lot of stuff done. I think we are going to, just like the internet, it's going to take us like 10 years to fully reap the benefits of what we've already invented.
Yeah. And that gets to my next question, which is like, how do you even approach building on top of these LLMs and exploring different models or picking a certain model and sticking with it with everything changing at the rapid pace that it has been.
Yeah. It's tough. I mean, we already just went over a couple items I wasn't fully aware of. I try to stay up to date, but I also try to filter out noise. So it's a challenge there. But once I become aware of something or some capability, then I treat it a lot like being an electrical engineer. When I was an electrical engineer, you got suppliers. You know, I would never work on the ASICs or like the guts of chips, but I'd be like, okay, this chip can do this and it's got these specs. It can do this and this and that. So it's very similar because I'm building circuits, but with software effectively. And so I generally try to look at, you know, what's a cool high margin application I could build? What's something that is going to actually like improve somebody's bottom line? So I kind of Steve Jobs it and start with the user. Then I work backwards and then I evaluate, okay, so what steps have to happen and what tooling do I need? And does it still make sense economically? Is it going to be high enough accuracy and quality? And is it going to be low enough cost for me to offer this?
Yeah. And so, I mean, diving back into something like Pull That Up, Jamie, or like the clips that like I'll launch an episode and I'll have like a cascader clipped section of the podcast I launch within like 30 minutes. Have you automated that process? Is Cascader like...
So I generally run it every morning. So you happen to drop in the morning. I should make it more async. So it's just triggered by your publishing, but basically, yeah, I have an agent that kind of knows I kind of assumed what you'd like. I honestly want to show you like the interface and get your take on maybe different topics. But I have 4 to 5 topics that it knows you like. It also takes into account, you know, what your speaker's expertise is and what your description is about, just so that it makes sure it covers that. And then it iterates over, it searches the database, like it automates the search, and it uses embeddings, which means it can get kind of vague. It can be a gist of what you're looking for. So it engineers the search terms, it goes out and searches them, and then it brings back the top clips and sends it to me in an email. So then I go click the link, and then I, you know, it's not perfect. I know that people complain, you know, they can't fully make clips yet, but it gets me close enough to where, you know, within, as you said, 30 minutes of your pod, I can drop something.
Yeah. And in that example, like, how many, if it's even more than one, agents are communicating with each other?
In this case, I wouldn't say they're all agents. They're AI systems. They're AI based systems. In that case, it happens to only be one, but you could foresee a future. And I was just talking with Rod about this. I want to integrate things like Google Trends into it so that you can see what's trending and then add that into your list of preferences. I want to have clips that are trending and have them ranked accordingly. So the Google Trends maybe isn't an agent yet, but maybe there'll be the equivalent by OpenAI at some point, which I could easily imagine happening since they seem to be kind of replacing Google in their business model. Then that would be an agent to agent workflow, for example.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just like thinking through it, like, as like, I guess, what would your advice be to somebody like myself thinking about implementing this? Cause it's like, again, going back to the rapid nature of the development of the space and all the tools that are coming to market. It's like one day I'm like, oh, I'm going to work on implementing this, and something new shiny comes out. It's like, oh wait, I want to do something over here now. And it's just like, you're constantly inundated with all this cool stuff you can do. But like, when it comes to practically sitting down and implementing it into your business, like, what are the things you think people should be focusing on?
Yeah, I think in general, and I'm stealing this from Rod, shout out to Rod from Bitcoin Park, but he said to me yesterday, marry the process, date the tool. So you probably have a general process of what you're trying to accomplish. Not that different from what I was describing with my starting with the user, working backwards. So you have a goal you're trying to accomplish, and you work backwards from there to find the tools that meet those ends. And so I guess what I would say is, you know, stay up to date on that, but keep in mind, you know, I go back to, like, do you know who Frederick Winslow Taylor is?
I do not.
He basically pioneered this idea of efficiency studies in manufacturing. So you want to like have as few steps, as few yes as possible. So I tried to do that with Jamie, is just everything, like, as fast going from getting the clip, like, podcast dropped. I didn't do it, you know, it's all automated. Go from podcast drop to clip out, everything in between, from finding the clip, editing, like, the timestamps, clicking the button, having the video generated, because it's like a video waveform, and then automating, posting it to Twitter and Noster, using AI to help me think of how to word the copy, and then publishing it. So, like, those are a bunch of steps, starting with, you know, dropping the pod. You have to think about, like, how to minimize the number of steps, and we still have a ways to go, but I've gotten it down to a process to where, as you said, I can be one of the first people in on making clips for you.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch, and the clips have been good. Like, it has, you've done a good job of honing in on my preferences and surfacing clips that are what I would call, what we in the biz call bangers, that are actually going to catch people's attention and get shared.
Yeah, the Tom Longo ones were awesome.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about that is it's kind of hybrid, because I did a few of them just based on the agent recommendations, but I can also go into the interface and search them myself. So I noticed there was one part that you were, that, like, you started the show with, or it was related to it at least. And so I went into Jamie, I searched it, and then I made a smaller clip so that you can reshare that. And now it's like a 30-second video, so people are more willing to commit 30 seconds to watch that.
Yeah. You mentioned Noster. How do you see Noster fitting into all of this? I mean, obviously you have the data vending machines where you sort of use Noster as this way to create this two-sided marketplace where you can send a note out saying, I'm looking to get this task accomplished, and you have different AI agents basically compete for sats to complete that task. And then there's a whole concept of, like, data aggregation for the models themselves, like using Noster events as a form of data to feed the models. There's a lot of people running with those two ideas specifically. Like, do you see value in that? Do you see that proliferating and gaining steam?
Yeah, I think the MPC plus Noster combination is really cool. I know Austin was working on that. And, you know, data vending machines are cool. I'm not quite Parker, but I want to say I'm like semi bearish sometimes on Noster, just because I feel, you know, people are putting up with a lot of, like, UX hassle, and I don't think, I love Odell, but I don't think the pitch should be get on Noster right now or you're a cuck and only Noster. I think the pitch should be get some in case it catches on. So kind of our philosophy at Jamie was, why not do both? You're gonna post this to Twitter. Hey, do you want to also post this to Noster? Log in with your extension and it's easy. Like, that's kind of more the mindset, so that you have a backup. You have a communication channel that's robust and can't be changed. And as you point out, you know, you can use Noster to relay information between agents, to identify them, to create web of trust. That's all great stuff.
Yeah. I think that's a big question in my mind is, like, does that using Noster as this messaging protocol for inter-agent task completion, like, manifest, like, is that a more optimal communications protocol for these agents to communicate through? Does it enable, like, a more robust discoverability, or is simply just, like, connecting agents via APIs the way this is going to work?
So this is funny. Austin Topher and I at TabConf, this is kind of how Cascader started. We created a new NIP that is distinct from DVMs. So DVMs, at least at that time, I think they've evolved over time, but they would just broadcast to everyone, I want this done. And that makes sense in a lot of cases where it's like, I don't care if you know that I'm trying to post an emoji, like I don't care if you know about me trying to generate an image, let's say, because it was going to be public anyway. But I thought it was better to announce the availability of the APIs, and, you know, Topher and Austin agree with me, just announce the availability of the APIs and then just let the machine scan those and choose at runtime. So I think that's a valuable paradigm. I'm not sure that it makes sense to create a paper trail for all that stuff for privacy reasons. I think the privacy OPSEC has gotten a lot better since then, so maybe I'll revisit it. But you know, back at that time, we were using NIP 4 for DMs. So it was broadcasting the metadata. It's like, why leave any metadata? You know, I was a wrestler in college. The way you defend yourself is you don't give anybody any handles. So it's like, why leak anything was kind of my mindset. And, you know, at the time, I think Pablo, for some reason, didn't want to encrypt DVM. So I was like, okay, that, why broadcast anything is kind of my mindset. I think at some point they added encryption, like after that, like a couple months after that, which is cool. But then you're still broadcasting metadata. You're still saying A talk to B. I'd rather just be over HTTP and just call it a day and not have to keep that paper trail. Yeah, so there's different trade-offs for different use cases is what I'm saying. That's pretty long-winded, but
yeah. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. You mentioned MPC too. Like, how that was, it's MCP or MPC?
You're right. I think it's MCP, because it ends with protocol. I forget what it stands for, but
MCP. I mean, that's been a big meme the last couple months, is this ability to sort of create these protocol, these sort of modularized context protocols that, what do they do? Like cache context and create the ability for you to easily sort of create like context verticals, if you will, that you can plug into and pull, so you don't have to keep reproducing context for these models.
Yeah, that's massive, and it's massive to have a big AI lab behind it like Anthropic. I mean, that just goes back to standardization tends to benefit everyone. It's a centralizing effect in some ways, but in some ways it's a decentralizing effect, because now you can make your own MCP repo of everything you've ever said on TFTC, and now maybe even earn sats for exposing that to the public, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. So what do you think? Do we get the world of AI that actually works for the people and is free and open, or do we get the monolith?
I think we're going to win, but it's going to take effort, and I don't like complacency. You know, I don't think Bitcoin would be where it is if it wasn't for, you know, all the people. You know, you're wearing the Silk Road hat. It wouldn't be where it is if it weren't for the people fighting for that future. And I think AI is no different.
Do you think there's enough people out there fighting for the open future?
I'm encouraged by what I see from the open source community. I think the human will to just not be dominated is very strong. It's stronger than maybe we thought. Maybe like 3 or 4 years ago, we were a lot more black-pilled than we are now. So I think we're seeing an awakening, but it's easy to get complacent.
Yeah.
It's easy to get soft.
Well, and the tools are there, right? Whether it's open source models, but I think you're talking to the Open Secret guys about implementing what they're doing, and that is incredibly powerful from a privacy perspective and a security perspective. And
yeah, I love to see those guys in the game. And I have to say, it's so clever that they basically repurposed like their hardcore Lightning. You know, they killed themselves to fight AML regulations, and turns out that maybe it wasn't like a, you know, viable business, or at least they didn't want to continue with that business, and they found a new business that's like, yeah, makes total sense now. Well,
let's explain why does it make sense in your context?
Well, so they do end-to-end encryption between the client and the compute in such a way that the service provider, like me or them, can't decode what's going on once it leaves, you know, the ASIC at, or maybe not an ASIC, but it leaves the chip at the compute center. And so that allows you to unlock a bunch more applications like medical, you know, HIPAA, and accounting, right? Anything that is sensitive, and in our case, even law. So that's something I'm curious to explore more with those guys, is how do we create more value for attorneys, where, you know, the two biggest concerns for them is, number one, you know, am I going to be, I think it was that Michael Cohen that presented fake evidence, like, am I going to be able to use this responsibly and have it not hallucinate? I think that's getting better, and their techniques, like in Jamie Web Search, how we provide the references. We don't just, we suggest that you don't trust, but you verify, but we give you a high level summary. Sometimes it does hallucinate, but you have the reference in line. So the first problem is, you know, can it be used responsibly? Will it hallucinate? Is it accurate? Then the second question is, am I going to get in trouble for leaking this data for a security breach? Or am I going to lose a case because I because I breached data that I shouldn't have. You know, that's entirely possible too. So the Open Secret guys found a very clever way to repurpose the Mutiny wallet technology for this new use case.
Yeah. No, that I'm talking to them a lot in recent months, and I think particularly for AI and privacy, like, you have a bunch of people uploading financial records, very intimate information, medical records, whatever it may be, and they're just like feeding it to ChatGPT or Grok or whoever, and not understanding that like that data is sitting exposed on the servers that they're sending it to. And so like by tapping into these Nitro enclaves to make sure it's end-to-end encrypted, and you can verify that there's no way for anybody that doesn't have access to the private key that you've set up via Open Secret to access the data. Like, I think that's powerful in terms of privacy and moving AI specifically towards a future that really preserves and values people's privacy. And like, if we're looking to protect ourselves against the digital panopticon, it seems like this is some like very critical niche application of this enclave technology that's going to be necessary to be widely adopted.
Yeah, this is what I'm talking about when I'm talking about the Space Force of Liberty. Like, they join the fight, and if you're out there, you're interested in AI, you know, hit me up. You know, there's plenty of work to go around. It's like a farm, so I'm glad the Open Secret guys got in here and really brought a game changer in.
Yeah. What's your you look ahead like 10 years, what is your ideal scenario of AI's progression, how it's being applied?
Yeah, my ideal scenario is the Young Ladies Illustrated Primer. Have you ever read that?
No.
It's a favorite. I know Ryan Gentry's a fan of that one. You know, something like that where it's a self-actualizing assistant. It doesn't just let you get soft. It responsibly teaches you and moves you along to achieve your potential. So this, I don't want to spoil the book, but it's about a woman. It's about a young woman that is in a very dysfunctional family, and she gets her hands on this magical book, falls in her lap, and the magical book teaches her the skills she needs to not only survive, but thrive. So that would be my ideals, to have a scenario like that, where you have a lot of people with pro-human AI assistance at their fingertips.
Yeah, I actually saw an example of this the other day on X, where I believe it was a woman was tweeting, like, I talked to a friend I hadn't talked to in quite a while, and I was really impressed with the change in his demeanor about like how he's approaching just life simply. And I asked him, like, what changed? And he's like, I gave ChatGPT like context, like, I want you to be the ideal father figure and talk with me through some of the problems I'm having in my life. And like, just by giving that sort of master context to a model and having conversations with it, like, changed how they view the world and how they operate within the world, which I thought was pretty cool.
That's incredible. I mean, that's great, but then it goes back to the privacy thing where,
yeah,
you're
exactly,
like, now is he blackmailable? Like, yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why I think people, myself included, I mean, it's tough too, because like the models, the monoliths that aren't privacy preserving are really good, really fast, really sleek UIs and user experiences, where it's just like the convenience factor is such where it's like, boom. I mean, I'm smart enough to understand what's happening with the data when I'm sending it, so I'm very sort of particular with what I'm using those models for, like things that I wouldn't worry if other people had access to. But when it comes to intimate life details, financial data, whatever it may be, like, I will not ever upload it to a model like that. So I think people need to understand when you're doing these things, like, they're very powerful, but there is that data leak. That
treat it like your work computer is the way I think about it, right? If you're working at a corporation, they usually got spyware on there to make sure you're not doing bad stuff, understandably. Use closed source AI that way. Even things like Open Secret, maybe keep a little bit in the tank, just because you never know if there's some mistake in there. Not criticizing those guys, just saying, I would say never trust anything fully, but you can be a little more trusting when you're doing your taxes or you're asking legal questions, legal theories. And then the other component to it is, you know, if you pay in Bitcoin, then you really are an anon. I mean, people use pullthatupjamie.ai for search, like for like web search. Like Carr completely removed Google from his life in a lot of ways. And it's really good. It's a Perplexity like experience. And if you pay in Bitcoin, how the hell do I even know who you are? There's no real way for me to trace that.
Yeah.
So that's another incredible component of encryption that isn't just the encrypting the contents, but even just encrypting the session.
Well, dive into that. Yeah. Like, so you don't need an account. You're running a VPN. You simply want to query something from Jamie.
Right.
And you get presented with a lightning invoice. Like, all right, I'll run this compute.
You don't even have to do that. I actually shout out to the Albi team. They did a great job on the Bitcoin Connect project. So you just hit Bitcoin Connect. You can plug in your Nostr Wallet Connect or other service providers. I think there's like LNC and other stuff, but generally it's Nostr Wallet Connect. You just plug in that string and then you pay it from your browser. And thanks to the superb privacy guarantees of Bolt 11 invoices, for at least for senders, how would I know who you are? Like, there's no way for me to really know.
Yeah, there's no like user account that's necessary to accomplish this.
And that's incredible that we have this technology and people barely know about it.
Yeah. It's, I mean, very like, think of a world where, and like you as a company too, like being forced to store all that data, whether it's simply just like email, password, whatever it may be. Like, I would not be surprised if that is proven to be an artifact of our modern times, like in 2 decades from now, where like the whole concept of a user account, email, and password is completely out the door because you don't
really, maybe we'll get burned enough times where it doesn't make sense. Well, like,
people got burned quite a bit.
Well, I'm just saying, like, OpenAI, like, we're thinking, oh, what if they're malicious? What if they just F up and now you have all your data out there to CCP, like, or something crazy like that.
Some dark web hacker gets their access to their servers and your username and account and every query you've ever made. Like, hey, do you want to buy the files that show what Marty's been querying on his account on OpenAI? Yeah, it's a scary thought.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we need more people to really understand this. Because that's like, even in Silicon Valley, like, I feel like they don't understand.
I think it's fiat brain. I think a lot of people don't like to go deep and actually do the iterations. They're just in the rat race trying to get to the next thing, get to the next shiny object. And I think we're all guilty of that. I even think Bitcoiners are guilty of that.
Guilty.
You know, but I think being able to slow down and really look at the depth of something is critical. That's why, you know, Nextdoor, somebody I respect a lot, is Keon at Stacker News. He's somebody I go to a lot to just kind of talk things through and think about the deeper repercussions. He's somebody that I respect a lot in that way.
Yeah, and you can tell just through the progression of Stacker News over the years and the decisions he's had made, the hard decisions he's had to make, and whilst trying to stay true to preserving user privacy. It's really cool. And Stacker News is one of the cooler projects in the space that has had this organic growth. Like, I feel like I see multiple Stacker News. It feels like it's replacing Reddit, and maybe not with like the subreddits or whatever, but like, whether it's Hacker News, I don't know, the conversation spaces, a lot of it's moving to Stacker News, which is cool to see.
Yeah. And it's like, what does that mean when you add economic cooperation or collaboration into posting? Like, what does that do to change the quality of posts? And the other aspect that Keon, I don't think, gets enough credit for is repopularizing Web of Trust. He was one of the first people that I know of talking about it in like 22, 23, maybe even earlier. And now it's kind of like commonplace on Nostr as Nostr has risen. But he's pioneered that whole technique, and, you know, it's working. I think overall, like, when I go to Stacker News, it's pretty high signal. I don't really see a lot of BS in there.
Yeah. No, you think about like the Reddit Gold sort of incentive structure. Like, it's very easy to game.
Oh yeah.
Cause it's not real money at the end of the day.
Right. you have to add some kind of like civil resistance into it.
Yeah. By making posting or interacting, I think more vaguely, putting an economic cost to it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that was one of the interesting things. Somebody else I enjoy chopping it up with is Lyle Pratt. And I was disappointed when Vita ended up pivoting. I wouldn't say I was disappointed. I mean, I understand why, but it was such a cool concept of just making phone lines spam resistant. I get spam calls every day. Well, my block list is so long.
I mean, I think that core functionality still exists, but again, going back to the two market problem, like just had this problem where not enough people have Bitcoin to make it like a deep enough market to create the network effect necessary to make those products viable right now. In the future, I think they'll definitely be widespread and widely adopted, but we're just in that phase of Bitcoin adoption where just simply not enough people have Bitcoin. And
yeah,
that's why.
He's crushing it with his other thing. He just went back to telecom plus AI.
Yeah.
No, he's just crushing it. He's going after, I love his business plan too. He's going after like the higher end small businesses. That's amazing.
Yeah. No, I mean, that team at Vita's top notch. They're crushing. That's like what you want to see too. Just like Lyle's somebody I talk to a lot about AI because I think he, out of everybody I know, he's one of the few that's like really on the cutting edge of all this things that are happening. You can just see it in Vita when you talk about like the compute costs, that the progression of the decline of the cost curve for compute over the last years has been insane.
Yeah. And also just like it is like humbling to have to pivot, and like that is such a massive pivot, but he went and did it and now it's working. So
yeah.
There's a lot to be learned there.
Yeah, so I think a lot of Bitcoiners are getting more mature in the sense it's like we can see very clearly the cypherpunk future and how Bitcoin plays into that future, but it's just like the information to understand that vision is nowhere near as distributed as it needs to be to have that vision manifest today. But I think ultimately it will manifest, and people every day are coming around to like, oh, I need Bitcoin right now. It's because like I need Bitcoin because treasuries are piss poor, stocks are dumping. Like it seems pretty obvious that the government's losing control of the debt situation. Now they're viewing Bitcoin as just like a wealth preservation thing. But I think we're just going to go through this adoption phase where it's viewed as that wealth preservation.
That makes sense. I was going to ask you, like, what do you think the next, okay, that's the first step. Like, how do you think you get them all the way to cypherpunk? Like, what are the key like revelations or properties that they pick up on that would.
I think Parker is on it. Like, you just need individuals, particularly business owners, demanding Bitcoin for payment, or at least offering it as a payment option. I think that there's like stepping stones towards that cypherpunk future, which is like you literally need to get Bitcoin in the hands of enough people to create the network effects that are necessary to facilitate the cypherpunk future we can envision.
And I'm also passionate about this. I'm very passionate about medium of exchange. I mean, Cascader accepts Bitcoin. I'm very passionate about this, and I know that there are people out there like Wes from Tampa Bay. Probably by the time this comes out, it will be public, but he was sharing with me a plan to do a medium of exchange study like on the ground, because the Tampa Bay's focus is grassroots adoption. So what are the objections? Like, how can you objection handle merchants and consumers if you don't know what the objections are? So like, how can we do that? And how can we, as you say, distribute the information we have as hardcore users to other people that don't want to have to learn how to run a server or something like that? Like, they just want to use it. So I think that's a really important initiative, and maybe I'll send you a link to that.
Yeah, I think it's important, but I do caution anybody doing this, just having been in this for 12 years now, like the merchant adoption, like leaning, focusing on, over-indexing on merchant adoption is going to lead to tears in the long run.
Like, yeah.
I think most people are going to be forced into Bitcoin just from economic forces, like good money replacing bad money. But I think...
I think a lot of the problem is consumer side, because people don't want to have to reconcile taxes, and they don't want to spend their Bitcoin.
I don't even
they,
think it's that. I think most people
are not
think...
living on zero. They're like, it's weird to not live on zero and then complain you don't want to spend your Bitcoin. It's like, just live on zero. Problem solved. Now you don't have a choice.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's like a very niche problem, like within Bitcoin circle. Like we're talking about, like when it comes to like mass merchant adoption and actual payment being facilitated via the Bitcoin network at these merchants. Like that's a, like that get on zero problem is like very niche within our bubble. Then like you get into the bubbles that exist on top of ours, which encompass, ultimately encompass the whole world. Like these people, you said get on zero to them, like they have no idea what that concept means. Like living 100% on a Bitcoin standard, like they don't even, most people still think Bitcoin's a Ponzi scheme.
No, I totally understand. I guess my point is, if you're like a Bitcoin maximalist and you're like that bullish, you shouldn't have cuckbucks to spend. It should just be Bitcoin. It's like, you don't have a choice. Like,
I don't know, somebody with a wife and kids, like they're like, I'm like most, like I am on a Bitcoin standard, like as close to 100% as you can get, but there's still that need to like,
I get that there's a flow, and I'm not like, especially in that type of scenario, I concede, you know, maybe you got to keep, especially for the big bills where it's like, all right, I'm going to have like a few hundred dollar tax bill if I spend this. I get that. But I'm even just talking about like, if a vendor accepts Bitcoin for coffee or something smallish, you should probably figure out how to support the network by spending. That's kind of
download Strike and spend from your cash account.
I don't like the complacency mindset. I think that's kind of not what you're saying, but like the idea of like, oh, I'm never going to spend any Bitcoin because
number go up forever.
Yeah. Like that's loser mindset. Like we do need to create incentives for merchants. I agree that you don't want to spend all your time there, but I think there's, why would the merchant accept it if you're not going to spend $5 on a coffee? It's not, you know.
No, I see. I mean, I ran through this example of Parker, like when I can say it now publicly, but you know, we were discussing it before Rod's acquisition of the Commons and creation of Bitcoin Park Austin. Like he took over the invoicing for rent for the studio, and he sent me my invoice on a Sunday. It was Zaprite invoice, and he had a 4% premium on fiat. And I was like, I'm not paying that. I just paid over the Lightning Network.
Right.
That was a large expense, thousands of dollars, like over the Lightning Network, settled instantly. I saved a ton on the premium he was charging plus the fees I would have paid by spending it via the fiat rails.
And when you think about it, like credit cards, they charge 2.9% plus 30 cents. So if you're like a convenience store, I was this close to convincing the convenience store down the street to go on to a Bitcoin standard. I think part of the problem is we need like a like real simple plug and go like POS that works. Like I'm really hoping Square or somebody like that can start.
Jack.
Yeah, he's talking about MOE, man. Like it's been a while. I know they said they've been working on it. Like I respect everything Jack does, but come on, man.
I imagine for Block, it's just like you have to deal with a lot of corporate bullshit that comes with being a multi-deca-billion-dollar publicly traded company. But
well, life hack I figured out is Cash App can do Lightning invoices, but it's kind of hidden. And I get why. They probably don't want like programmatic like lump sums happening. So they do kind of have breaks on it in that way. But it's like, all right, my barber's curious about Bitcoin. I can tip them in Bitcoin. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I did that to my barber a few months ago. Like I sent her Bitcoin. Like I got her cash tag and sent her Bitcoin. She never claimed it. I was like, what the heck? I got to go back to my original barber down here.
What's funny, because my barber's like, what's happening to it? It's going down. What's happening to it? And then, but you know, 6 months ago, she was like, oh, it keeps going up. And it's like, like I told my mom about it, and she was like, yeah, I might sell this. I told her I might sell this, and she says, no, listen to him. Hold it forever. Like your mom was the voice of reason.
I want to send out an apology to my OG barber here in Austin, Kirby. Kirby, I miss you. I haven't been like 6 or 7 months. It's far in North Austin. It's hard to make the drive.
You're going schedule. Back to flow. You're going to get back into lacrosse, right?
Yeah, dude. Visor down, flow out.
We had a guy, this is funny. I had a guy that sat next to me in high school chemistry who was who ended up being the goalie for Syracuse. His name is Bobby Wardwell, but we called him Brobert Flowell.
That's a very lacrosse name, Bobby Wardwell.
Yeah.
I actually did recognize that name.
Yeah. He was at Syracuse. I think they were like number two or something. I remember watching him on TV. I was like, oh, Notre Dame versus Syracuse, when, 1 versus 2.
When would he have been there?
I want to say it was like 14 or 15 time range.
So my brother beat him in the NCAA tournament.
Oh, really?
Bryant beat them, upset them in the first round when they were number two.
I didn't know Bryant that. That makes 15. Sense.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah. Big
Sorry,
upset.
Sorry, Bobby.
Bobby. Bryant Bulldogs got you. They got smoked by Maryland in the next round, but it was a good underdog moment for the Bulldogs there. And that was 2014. Yeah, that was 2014.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. It's been fun. Where can people learn more about Cascader, Jamie, Clara, whatever they're interested in? What piece of advice would you have to people out there exploring this intersection of Bitcoin and AI?
Yeah, I would say, if you want to check us out, there's pull.upjamie.ai. So if you're listening to this, you're probably a podcast aficionado. So we have the top 30 or 40, you know, podcasts I think Bitcoiners would be interested in, including this one. And so you'll be able to instantly search stuff. You could send a deep link to your friends. So you just click a link, send it to your friend, and it'll dump them right in the actual part you care about. You won't have to, this problem where you're like, hey, you got to listen to this whole hour long podcast and find the part that relates to you. So there's the quick share, there's the clipping if you want to make clips and share them. We're open to other podcasts if you want us to index you. There's a request button, and you can fill out the form and we'll get back to you like pretty much immediately. So you'll get your last like 10 or so episodes indexed and searchable for yourself and your fans. And you'll get a bunch of other benefits like the Jamie Pro Agent, which will give you emails every time you drop a podcast with curated clips based on your interests. So that's another benefit. So yeah, let's pull that up, Jamie. If you're an attorney and you deal with, any kind of multilingual cases or any kind of litigation or depositions, that type of stuff, and you need to be able to pull things up fast, similar use case to Jamie, we can do that for you. We have Clara AI, so get in touch with us. I guess I'll give you my calendar link. I don't know. That's one way to get in touch with us. And then if you're out there and you're a builder, my DMs are open. I would love to see more liberty-minded people out there focused on building the future and not just kind of passively consuming and waiting for the feudalists to come get us.
They're not going to get us. The human spirit is strong.
Yeah.
We're going to win.
Yeah, we're going to win.
Let's go seize the day, Jim.
Yeah. That's what my socks say. My dad gave me socks. They say, carpe the fuck out of this DM.
Carpe diem, freaks. Peace and love. Freaks, thank you for listening to the show. I hope you liked it. If you did like it, please make sure you subscribe, rate, review the show. It helps us out a lot. And also, if you like these conversations, I've come to realize that many people listen to the podcast. They don't know we have another sort of layer of this media company. We have the newsletter, the Bitcoin Brief. Go to tftc.io. Make sure you subscribe there. A lot of the topics that are discussed on this podcast, I write about 5 days a week in the newsletter. We also have the TFTC Elite tier. If you sign up for that, become a member. We have a private Discord server for the elite freaks out there where we're dropping ad-free versions of this show and having discussions about everything we talk about. A day early. Logan wanted me to make sure. If you want to get the show a day early, become a TFTC Elite member. You will get that. We have our Discord server. Right now it's conversation between myself and TFTC Elite tier members, but we're going to expand that. We'll probably do closed Q&As with people in the industry. I may be doing Macro Mondays. So join us. Go to tftc.io, subscribe, find the button in the top right corner of the website, become a TFTC Elite member. Thank you for joining us.
Okay.